Alright, hello and welcome to the first Parallel Limes minicast. What this means is, this week I did not have enough time to edit the full episode, although it's recorded. So we're just going to do a quick thing about something I had lying around, and we'll get back to you with a full episode next week. Thanks for holding with us, folks.
In Bram's defense, it is A, she was very busy, and B, it is a thing that is lying around that is germane to the topic of the podcast.
It's true. Today we are discussing the board game, yes, board game, Tales of the Arabian Nights. This is a game originally published in like the 80s, I think. I don't know exactly when in the 80s. And the base premise is you are characters from the Arabian Nights, Ali Baba,
The subtitle of the game is The Legendary Storytelling Board Game in the World of Aladdin and Sinbad.
Fair enough. That sums it up pretty well. Praise be to Allah. I don't know. Should I keep that in the podcast? Is it offensive?
I think that, like, context helps. It's relevant to mention, like, part of the flavor of the game is that there's a lot of, like, Allah be praised running around.
Yeah, okay.
Like, Allah is willing, and therefore this good thing happens.
Yeah. So, the key shtick of the game is that you take your turns going around a nice world map. There's a big, solid board you get, and it's kind of cute because the amount of speed that you traverse with is measured with... That's a stupid sentence. The speed with which you go around is measured with your wealth. So if you're super wealthy, actually you're a little bit slower sometimes. If you're really fast on water, that's the sound of a board being laid out. There are some spaces you can't go to normally, but if you draw a card, you can go to one of these places of power and have some cool encounters.
And they're all, you know, they're all themed after the Arabian Nights. So, like, we have the Jeweled Fortress and the Valley of Diamonds and the Lake of Colors and the Sepulchre of Solomon. And, like, the center of the board and your start place and ultimately your end place is the city of Baghdad. And, you know, so you have all of West Asia, some of Africa, North Africa, and also Europe, and you travel around.
You have some quest cards you're trying to fulfill, you have some treasure you can collect, although getting treasure is actually pretty hard in the game.
Yeah, there are a bunch of treasure cards here, and I feel like I've seen about five of them in all the times I've played this game.
Yeah, and basically what you're trying to do is you're trying to collect story points and you're trying to collect destiny points. Flavorfully, these are a little different, I guess, although they come up just kind of at random from your encounter.
Yeah,
sometimes.
They a lot of the time, how they're awarded, like, the actions that cause them to occur seem pretty random, but a lot of destiny points are things like, you know, you are a person of sort of cosmic import, you know, they have more to do, generally speaking, with magic, or with, like, becoming extremely important in the world, and story points are just sort of like, ah, this thing happened to me. You know, story points are more often like, oh, this was worth 3 story points. This is a pretty good story to tell around the dinner table.
Yeah, or you stub your toe, 1 story point. Good for you.
Yeah.
And the main shtick of this game is that it comes with this big, heavy Book of Tales. And the Book of Tales is 300 pages long.
It is your GM.
It is your GM. And whenever you land anywhere... whenever you land anywhere, I was going to say with exception, but there's no exception, you will get some kind of encounter, usually by drawing an encounter card, and then you have to cross-reference that with a matrix, and then you have to choose what you're doing. So if you're encountering, for instance, I'm drawing this card from the top, until I draw one that's a normal encounter card. Where are these city cards on the top? If you draw an Enchantress, then depending on what time of day it is, which matches to how long you've been playing the game, you will get to see what kind of Enchantress it is by looking it up in the Book of Tales. For instance, let's say, it is an angry Enchantress, or like Persnickety or something, and then you roll some dice, and then you go to a certain matrix encounter.
And you figure out what you can do with this angry Enchantress.
Yeah, and like, depending on what it is you're meeting and how you're meeting it, you can choose from a table, hey, if you want to, like, you want to grovel before the Enchantress, you want to honor the Enchantress.
You want to rob her, or follow her, or question her.
Sometimes these things won't make complete sense. Like, say you're meeting, sometimes you could be encountering a storm. One of the options is
drink
the storm. Which I think in the game that we played meant that actually you just got drunk while a storm happened or something.
But I think I've seen another game.
It was Drink the Fire.
Yeah, no, that's Drink the Fire. I think Drink the Storm was, it was a magical storm and you just like...
Yeah. And for any of these, you have to roll the destiny die and then one of three things could happen. So like there's a huge...
And you get to, you know, one of three things can happen and then maybe you get to choose an option once you're in that thing.
Yeah. And these can all be affected too if you have certain skills and you start out the game with a couple of skills, you just get to choose... And you might as well choose them at random because sometimes it feels like they come up at random.
Yeah, they sure do.
Like, the first game I played, one of the skills I had was magic, and magic came up all the time, and I was a crazy good wizard, and it was great.
And it, so it seems like, you know, like, the second time you played, as I recall, you were like, well, magic was awesome for me that time, so I guess it'll be awesome in general. It's not awesome
in general. No, it's not awesome in general. One of my friends always chooses Courtly Graces. Sometimes they get to Courtly Grace things. Not all the time.
I usually play Scheherazade, so I usually choose, I think... Seduction, storytelling, and intelligence. So I'm just a sexy nerd wandering through the land.
Tales of the Arabian Nights, subtitle, Revenge of the Hot Nerd. I guess not revenge.
But no, that's how I play this game.
Also, when you do this, in addition to being able to get treasures and get different skills and master your skills, one of the big things that can happen is you can get different statuses. You can get good ones or bad ones.
You can turn into a beast. You can just get beast form.
You can be crippled. You can be respected. You can be wounded. One of the ones that bugs us a bit is sex change, because you cannot win the game while sex changed.
Yeah, and in my head, the way that you retcon this is just that, like, you know, these are all people who are very attached to whatever gender they have, and it's really just troublesome and difficult for them to function as another gender.
Yeah, although it's weird because by the rules of the game, you're not allowed to woo anyone unless they're of the opposite sex.
Oh, right.
But if your sex changed, then you can definitely woo a person of the opposite sex that you started out
as. Yeah, I think we have a strong tendency to just drop the rules that force you to be straight, because they don't matter.
Yeah, whatever. Although, in its defense, even if you start out as Aladdin or Alibaba or something, you get to choose your starting gender, sex, I don't know, whichever one.
Yeah, I guess you do.
You can flip it whichever way you like, because you get to flip around your player token depending on what your sex is.
You have this nice little, like, player board that informs you, like, what color you are and what your skills are and what your matrices are, so that you can be like, oh, Matrix M? What are my choices on Matrix M? Okay, I'll choose attack from Matrix M.
Another funny status card is being married. Being married is, like, the worst thing that can happen.
It sucks so much! Because you have to... So there are a bunch of cities, and you can't visit a city and then visit another city without returning to the city in which your spouse is. And every time you arrive at the city, you ostensibly, like, try to have a child with your spouse. And sometimes the child is beautiful, and sometimes the child is ugly.
Like a camel.
Yeah, if the child is super great, you get, like... destiny points or something.
Yeah, but if you get an ugly kid, you're really sad.
You get grief-stricken as an effect.
You're like, oh man, no beautiful baby contest for me.
Yeah, I think you might get like joyous or blessed as a status if you have a truly beautiful child.
Yeah, so the way this game works, you may have set up, but now you just kind of go around having a time.
Yeah, and you have a quest at the beginning of your game that you're sort of loosely. So the way that you win is at the very beginning of the game, you choose a number of story points and a number of destiny points, adding up to 20. So you can have, you know, 15 story and 5 destiny points. And this is basically something that you can choose randomly because these effects happen randomly. So once you get the correct number of story and destiny points, you return to Baghdad and you declare yourself the winner. And everybody else has a round to get to Baghdad, too.
Yeah. And in the event that other people manage to get to Baghdad within that last round and also have enough points, there's a tiebreaker, and then there's another tiebreaker, and then if neither of those tiebreaker works, my favorite rule is invoked, and the tale is greater for the telling, and you both win.
Yeah, no, which is I really like that. Like, you know, I almost wish that there weren't so many tiebreakers, especially because the game lasts so long and is so random. Like, is anybody going to be really sad?
That's what the game is. Olivia and I quite like it. If Charles was here with us, he would describe it, in his terms, I believe, as a misery simulator.
I'm not sure if that's literally the terminology he would use for this game, but that is literally the kind of terminology he uses, so...
I swear I heard him say it about this. He hates this game.
Yeah, so the reason that Charles doesn't like this game are good reasons to not like this game. So the GM is random, which means that your traits don't matter, your role-playing doesn't matter, any kind of consistency or character doesn't matter. You know, I cannot, if I'm playing my Scheherazade character, who is good, who is wise and tells stories and has seduction, I can't steer her into positions where it would be particularly good for her to have these skills. Nope, they come up randomly.
You can try a bit. Like, you can try to woo people more than often. You can, more often than usual. You can eventually, if you have mastery level skills, get a better option of the various different ideas in the matrices.
Yeah, and that's true. But, you know, like, one of the people that we played with before, whenever he plays Alibaba, anytime he has the option to rob someone, he does. And that's, you know, like, cute and fun, but it actually doesn't help or change his story particularly. Because, again, it is so random. Like, you'd sort of think, like, oh, well, if I go around attacking people and being really bellicose, that seems like it'd be bad for me. No, not necessarily.
Yeah, and the other thing, too, is sometimes, like we talked about with taking the drink option while you're in a fire, you will not necessarily even know what you're doing when you're trying it, or when you're choosing an option, and you won't necessarily have something that follows naturally from what you chose.
Yeah, like, you know, for example, there's something like hire, and you might think to yourself, like, oh, well, I've encountered an angry enchantress. I'll try to hire the enchantress. But instead, maybe, of hiring the enchantress, you hire someone to, like, spy on the enchantress, and you're like, oh, book, I didn't know that I was doing that. All right.
Yeah, so it's, you're sort of steering a story, but you have blinders on, and you're not very good at steering. Maybe you don't have a driver's license. Oh, you're drunk. I'm going to call the police.
But yeah, so that's a... Those are the reasons to dislike the game, and I think that they are not good reasons, especially because this game does take 45 minutes at absolute minimum.
You mean not good, not bad reasons to like?
Yeah, these are not bad reasons to dislike.
Not yet.
Double negative.
Okay, yeah. No, I agree. This game can support up to 6 players. I absolutely do not recommend it with 6 players.
Have you played it with six?
Yeah, I think so. It took forever. I had a good time, but someone else was in jail for the whole time.
You can't just get trapped in jail.
Yeah, that's funny. So, I recommend this game with 3 players, maybe 4 players. Because with 3 players, everyone's always doing something. One player is always consulting the Matrix for someone else and seeing what their choices mean. Another player gets to read from the Book of Tales. And reading from the Book of Tales is lots of fun.
Reading from the Book of Tales is the best part. I really like being the Book of Tales reader.
What this game is a semi-interactive... It's an interactive 1001 Tales of the Arabian Nights...
Choose your own adventure board game.
That, yes, Charles, it's sort of just like being alone and reading a story that doesn't always make sense. But it's a good time with your friends, I think. Flavor of it can be funny. It's a little sexist sometimes because it is based off of tales that are not particularly modern.
No, not particularly modern.
But, like, look, that's just how the Arabian Nights are going to be, and I don't know what else you can do.
I'm not uncomfortable with having a settings flavor be uncomfortable if that's the correct flavor for the setting. Like,
there was a note in the rules.
Yeah, so they're aware.
So they're like, look, we tried our best to choose from the Arabian Nights... The best examples women that we could, and like there's playable ladies, and you know we did our best to make them not all shrews or idiots or whatever, but sometimes as far as storytelling games go, it doesn't maybe tell a super cohesive story or a super well put together story.
It does tell a story, and actually potentially importantly, this is a storytelling game where you can tell a story and have fun telling a story and choosing a character's actions with no role-playing whatsoever.
Oh yeah, absolutely none. It is easy to sit down and play. There's not a huge amount of setup.
Yeah, so definitely, like, if you are interested in storytelling games, but if you're not at a point where you're comfortable role-playing or don't actually want to role-play or don't want to figure out, like, how do I make a character... If if you still want to have the experiences of telling stories, I think this is a great way to tell those kinds of stories.
Yeah. If you have fond memories of Treasure and Adventure books and you would like to hang out with some friends and have some wacky adventures, I think it's a pretty okay time. I don't play it all the time. I play it a couple times a year, I think. But I usually have a good time when I play it. That said, in sharp contrast to most of the games that we look at for this show, it is a board game and not a role-playing game, which means, A, you can't buy it as a PDF. You have to get it physically, unless you do a lot of print-and-play stuff, I guess, and print out a whole giant
board. That would be so much printing. Because, again, the Book of Tales is huge. I have these stacks of cards in front of me. They are status, encounter, quest, treasure. And the status has some doubles, but this status stack is about an inch. The encounter stack is similarly sized. Like, there are... have to be like at least 300 cards here.
Yeah, and B, instead of being able to pay for this with something like $10-$15
or a good deed,
or a good deed, I was actually going to say that.
Shout out to Buried Without Ceremony.
Yeah, this game I think would put you out something like $35-$40 probably. I can't remember what I paid for it.
Yeah, I don't know.
But like normal board game price, and like it is a big solid box. But, you know, that is more than average for the things that we look at usually, and it is less than average, a game that creates interesting narratives. I still like it.
You should play this game if it sounds fun to you, if you want to experience storytelling without having to roleplay even at all. You should not play this game if you have no money. You should not buy this game if you have no money.
You shouldn't play this game if a run of bad luck will make you feel real bad, because sometimes that'll just happen.
Yeah, you shouldn't play this game if, especially if when you sit down to a board game, you're very competitive, because it's not in your hands, buddy.
This is super cash.
You shouldn't play this game if having your character's actions be under your control is important to you, because it's not in your hands, buddy. Yeah, I also, briefly, I just want to scoot back. The flavor in this game is really fun and really lovely, and the Book of Tales is written really quite well and is a lot of fun. And, you know, you encounter jinn and ifrits, and, like, sometimes you can become the sultan. You know, and so it really is... And I will admit here that I have not read the Arabian Nights, but, like, it really does, I think, entrench you in, you know, this Dar al-Islam magical Arabia world, which I think is a lot of fun.
Yeah, no, it's... Honestly, it's a setting that I wouldn't mind seeing in some other things. I find it fun. it's a good time. Yeah, so, hey, that was Tales of the Arabian Nights.
This has been a minicast.
Yeah, this has been a minicast. I don't know if I'm going to make it an actual episode number, or if you make it a minicast number, or... a letter?
Minicast number seems reasonable to me.
Yeah, that's probably right.
Oh, this is published by Z-Man Games.
Oh, yeah, sorry. Published by Z-Man Games. I don't know what human it is that's responsible for it. It is manufactured by Panda Game Manufacturing, who have a cute
important
logo.
Important to know.
Copyright 1985, West End Games. Eric Goldberg. So that's probably who we have to thank for this. So thanks, Eric.
You've provided me a fair number of hours of wacky Arabian-themed fun.